Welcome to the deep dive. Okay, here's a fun fact to kick things off. What's the single biggest seller at Walmart? It's the banana. Yeah, not TVs, not socks, it's a banana.
It's wild, right? And behind that simple fact is this huge retail puzzle. How is this tropical fruit basically everywhere all the time, super cheap? But, you know, the quality can be all over the place.
That's exactly the mystery we're digging into today. We want to follow that banana, like all the way from the tropics, understand the journey, the science involved, and figure out why sometimes you get a perfect banana and sometimes, well, you don't. So let's start with the store shelf. What's the strategy there?
Right. So what's really interesting is that even though it's almost always the same type of banana, the Cavendish, mainly because it ships well, Walmart actually has this kind of three-level approach in the aisle. It's about reaching different shoppers and managing risk.
Okay, three levels. So level one is?
That's your basic unbranded banana, the price leader. It's treated purely as a commodity. You know, price is everything for that one.
Gotcha. Cheap and cheerful. Then tier two.
That's where they bring in their own brand, Market Side Organic. This one's got the USDA seal. It targets shoppers who are maybe a bit more health conscious, willing to pay a little extra for that organic label.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
So private label for the premium spot. What about tier three? You mentioned big names like Dole. Why have those if you've got your own organic line already?
That's all about keeping the supply chain robust. It's resilience, really. These big national brands, they source from all over Costa Rica, Ecuador, you name it. So if there's a problem in one region, like a storm or something, Walmart still has bananas coming in from Dole's other sources. It guarantees availability and leverages that brand trust people have.
Wow. Okay. So it's this complex mix of price, branding, and just making sure the shelves are never empty.
Yeah.
But getting those bananas here consistently, that sounds like a massive logistical challenge. Like you said, a race against the clock.
Oh, absolutely. It's this incredible feat of timing and biology, really. The whole thing starts with picking them super green, like hard and green.
Right, not yellow and ready to eat.
No way. Then they go straight into these special refrigerated containers. People call them reefers. Mm-hmm. And the temperature inside is critical. It's kept like super precise, right between 56 and 58 degrees Fahrenheit.
56 to 58. Why that specific range?
Because that temperature basically just stops the clock. It puts the banana into a kind of suspended animation, halts the ripening process cold for that whole trip over the ocean.
Suspended animation for bananas. Okay. So they arrive green. What happens then? The final act, you called it?
Exactly. So once they land in the U.S., they go into these special ripening rooms at the distribution centers. They're airtight. First, they warm them up a bit. Then they introduce ethylene gas, carefully controlled amounts.
Ethylene gas. That sounds important. Is that what actually makes them turn yellow and sweet?
That's the trigger. Ethylene kicks off what scientists call the climacteric phase. Think of it like flipping a switch inside the banana. It starts this irreversible process, converting all those starches into sugars. That's the sweetness, yeah.
Okay, so if the science is that buttoned up with the temperature control and the ethylene, why do we still get those duds sometimes? You know the ones? They look okay, maybe a bit yellow, but they taste like chalk, starchy.
Right. And what our research points to is that when you get a bad banana, it's almost always a failure in logistics, not like a problem back on the farm. And the number one culprit, it's called chilling injury.
Chilling injury. So that's when the temperature drops below that magic 56 degrees during shipping.
Bingo. If it gets too cold, even for a while, on that ship, it permanently damages the enzymes inside the banana, the ones needed for ripening. So even if they hit it with ethylene later, those damaged enzymes just can't do their job properly. They can't convert the starch to sugar.
So the damage is already done. It's biologically impossible for it to ripen correctly at that point. It's doomed to be starchy.
Pretty much, yeah. It's locked in.
Okay, this is super useful. So for us, you know, standing there in the aisle, how can we spot a potentially chilled banana? Is there a visual clue?
There is. This is the key takeaway for avoiding those bad ones. Look closely at the peel. If it looks dull, sort of matte, or has a grayish, almost lifeless yellow color, avoid it. That's the telltale sign of chilling injury. You want a banana with a bright, vibrant yellow peel, maybe even a little bit of a glossy look to it. That usually means the temperature stayed right where it needed to be.
Dull and grayish is bad. Bright and vibrant is good. Got it. Stepping back a bit, this whole system, the single variety, the massive scale, the low price, it didn't just appear, right? There's a history here.
Oh, absolutely. The modern banana industry, as we know it, was largely built by, well, corporate giants, companies like the United Fruit Company, which is now Chiquita, and Standard Fruit, which became Dole. their huge control over production and the supply chains in Central and South America.
Yeah.
That's actually where the term Banana Republic came from, reflecting that influence.
Right, a whole political term born from this one fruit. And looking ahead, you mentioned almost everything is Cavendish. Is that reliance a risk?
It's becoming a huge risk. There's this disease, a fungus called Panama disease, tropical race 4, or TR4. It lives in the soil, it's spreading, and the Cavendish. It basically has zero natural defense against it.
Whoa. So the future of the world's most popular, cheapest fruit is actually uncertain.
It really is. It puts a lot of pressure on science to find a solution. The long-term survival of the banana, as we know, it might actually depend on developing new varieties that are resistant. And that includes potentially needing consumers to accept genetically modified options, like the QCAV4 variety they've already approved in Australia. It's a quiet race. But yeah, the stakes are pretty high for the humble banana.